Stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's Immigrants and Education Press Conference Call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to Angela Kelly. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you very much. I am pleased to have the privilege of moderating today's telephonic press conference. I am the director of the Immigration Policy Center, and we have just published a report by Roberto Gonzalez entitled Wasted Talent and Broken Dreams, The Lost Potential of Undocumented Students. Roberto is with us on the call, as is a distinguished panel of education experts, and soon will be joined by Senator Durbin. The experts on this panel have come to this issue because of their commitment to America's youth. Their expertise as educators and their experience with immigrant youth is what we're going to be talking about today. This press conference comes against the backdrop of a pending bill, the DREAM Act, which will likely see floor action later this week. The DREAM Act, as most of you know, is a bipartisan bill that's a targeted measure for young people who've lived in the United States for at least 5 years, and if after they finish high school, if they complete either military service or earn a college degree, they may be eligible to receive permanent status in this country. We have experts on the phone who will be able to address any questions that you may have about the bill, but first we're going to be hearing from our panelists. Our first panelist is Mr. Reg Weaver. He is the president of the National Education Association. Mr. Weaver?
Good afternoon. It is a joy and a pleasure having the opportunity to participate because the 3.2 million members of the National Education Association strongly, I mean strongly, support the DREAM Act. The DREAM Act would benefit our country by advancing the talents, I believe, of thousands of hard-working students who have grown up here and graduated from high school. As educators, we believe that these children have the human and civil right, and no matter where they are from, they have this right to rise as far as their abilities and their drive will take them. And the DREAM Act benefits not just these students, but strengthens the fabric of a society committed to justice, equality, and opportunity. Now, access to a college education and a path to legalization is a critical way to open doors and promote equality in our society. The NEA has written Congress repeatedly, I mean repeatedly, urging the passage of the carefully tailored DREAM Act, and we will be watching upcoming votes on the DREAM Act very, very carefully. Now, we need to seize the opportunity of this amendment to pass the DREAM Act not yesterday, but now. We cannot allow history to look back on us and say that we dimmed the lights on future generations of children and left them in the shadows. And so I would urge the Congress to pass the DREAM Act.
Thank you, Mr. Weaver. Our next speaker is Dr. Robert Bergenau. He is the Chancellor of the University of California at Berkeley. Dr. Bergenau?
So this is Robert Bergenau, and first of all, I agree with absolutely everything that Mr. Weaver just said so eloquently. As a lifetime educator and Chancellor of UC Berkeley, I have the privilege of being on the ground interacting with these undocumented students in real time, and so therefore I see the human face on a daily basis. I cannot emphasize what extraordinary people these students typically are. They've overcome incredible barriers in order to make their way into a highly selective university like the University of California at Berkeley and are high achieving at our university. We've invested in these students for more than a decade, from kindergarten through high school. They've worked hard and have achieved an incredible amount, again, often in very difficult circumstances, to gain access to our universities. And then they find that the American dream is not readily available to them. I can't emphasize too much that our country needs these people. These are the kind of people who have made America great and will continue to make America great. We need to provide them equal access to education and to the ability to pay the cost of their education and then ultimately to provide them a pathway to careers so that they can contribute to our economy, so that they can pay taxes, create new businesses, again, make our country guarantee that our country will continue to be the great country that it has always been. This is a humane investment, but it's also a wise economic investment that we need to guarantee the continuing preeminence of the American economy.
Thank you so much, Dr. Bergenau. Our third speaker is Governor Bob Weiss. He is the president of the Alliance for Excellent Education and the former governor of West Virginia. Governor Weiss?
Thank you very much. As the head of the Alliance for Excellent Education, a national organization dedicated to the proposition that every child should graduate from high school ready for college in the modern workplace and to take their place as a citizen, we believe that the DREAM Act is critical to this. We have a very large focus on stemming the dropout epidemic that's in our country, with at least a third of our students nationally not graduating in a four-year period. The DREAM Act will provide a lot of the incentive to do that. Recently, I visited a multicultural high school, which is turning around and beating the odds, and then was shocked to learn that many of the students are dropping out in the 11th and 12th grades because the DREAM Act isn't in effect, and they feel that as undocumented or as aliens or that they will not be able to continue. So what's the point? And yet they're the ones who are our future. This will help stop dropouts. It provides motivation to not only the 65,000 foreign-born students who will graduate, but also to many thousands of more. And if the moral imperative isn't enough, a lot of work that my organization does is the cost of dropouts. The $10,000, for instance, less income that a high school dropout makes than a high school graduate, the $1 million less income over their lifetime that a four-year college graduate makes over a high school dropout. And so when somebody drops out, there are two groups affected. First, the individual themselves and the bad outcomes they have, but then it's the rest of us. And what the DREAM Act will do is will turn potential tax consumers into taxpayers. It provides motivation. And let me speak for just a second as a former governor as well, and every governor, every mayor, public official wants to be involved in creating jobs in their economy. Every educated person is one more incentive to recruit a business to expand or locate in your area. Every dropout is one more disincentive to that recruitment. Every educated person is one more taxpayer that's going to be making a contribution. Every dropout is simply one more cost to meet. And so the DREAM Act will provide the dream, yes, to those students, will provide the motivation, but it's also going to provide lifeblood to our system, as well, to all of us in our society.
Thank you, Governor Weiss. Our next speaker is Roberto Gonzalez. Roberto is at the University of California at Irvine, and he is the author of the recently released report. Roberto, could you share with us some of the highlights of the report? And by then, Senator Durbin should have joined the call, and we'll turn to him.
Sure. Thank you, Angela. It's my honor to speak on this issue and my research. I've spent the last 3.5 years in fieldwork in Southern California, spending time with these young people, looking at essentially what happens to undocumented children as they move into adulthood. I interviewed 102 18 to 36-year-olds in Southern California, and did extensive life histories. What I can say is this is a very unique group of young people who, despite the odds, get into college and do well. They grow up under extreme poverty. Many of them work full-time while going to college. They help their parents. They take care of their siblings. These are young people who can't legally drive, they can't legally work, they can't vote, they can't get financial aid. But despite this, many do very well. They're bilingual, they're resilient, and they persist and persist. They get into college and they make the most of their experience. These are young people with good networks of support and high rates of participation in extracurricular activities and community involvement. So essentially, if given a chance to better their education and join the workforce, this is a win-win situation. They improve their education, get better jobs, pay more in taxes. As a result, they benefit our economy, they'll make more money and put more back into the economy. They contribute to a highly skilled workforce. We're currently facing a mismatch between the demand for high-skilled jobs and the available supply. Between 9 and 15 occupations projected to grow the fastest in the next 10 to 15 years require an associate's or above. Moreover, they're going to save taxpayers money. A 30-year-old Mexican immigrant with a college degree will pay $5,300 more in taxes a year and cost $3,900 less in government expenses. And so what we can also say is that of the 10 states with in-state tuition laws that allow these students to pay at in-state rates, they've not experienced the downside claimed by the opponents. These new laws have not resulted in an influx of new immigrant students, nor have they displaced native-born students, nor added financial burdens on the educational system. Thank you.
Thank you, Roberto. Operator, have we been joined by Senator Durbin yet?
No, ma'am, we have not.
All right. So what I would suggest we do then is perhaps, Operator, you could give instructions to the reporters on the line as to how they could ask a question. And we'll take as many questions as we can until the senator joins the call. Then we'll let him make his opening statement, and then we'll go back to taking more questions.
Thank you, ma'am. Today's question and answer session will be conducted electronically. If you would like to ask a question, please do so by pressing the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Once again, that's star 1 for questions, and we'll pause for a moment to give everybody the opportunity to signal. And we'll take our first question from David Montgomery of the Fort Worth Star.
Yes, this is for, I suppose, Angie. Angie, could you walk us through the legislative state of play, what the outlook for passage is, when it's coming up, et cetera, and I guess also have y'all been able to get people on board who weren't on board earlier?
Sure. I can tell you the little bit that I know, but obviously this is Senator Durbin's baby, and he could describe it much better than I. The DREAM Act has been Rule 14 by Majority Leader Reid, which means that he's been able to bring it directly to the floor as the power that he has as Majority Leader. There has been a cloture petition filed last night, which will ripen by tomorrow, and this is a cloture vote on a motion to proceed. That vote should happen tomorrow, as far as I know. And it is a procedural vote that, if there are sufficient votes for it, means that the Senate will move to the bill. It'll be a motion to proceed to the bill. Then there will likely be conversations among both majority and minority leader about what amendments might be offered and how much time will be given to those amendments and when they'll wrap up debate on the bill. That is the course that it could take, but as we all know, the Senate process can be a big mystery and somewhat unpredictable. In terms of the votes, Dave, again, we don't know. There has not been a vote on the Senate floor on the DREAM Act. I can tell you, as the speakers were so eloquent in describing, that this is, quite frankly, less about immigration and much more about our kids. And really about the treatment of America's youth and our commitment to them. This is a bill that I think is going to be difficult for members to vote against and to look in the eyes of their constituents and their children and say that, it didn't make sense to give these kids a chance to go to college. I think that's a very different debate and discussion, and this is a different piece of legislation than we had last June, where you had a very complicated bill with a lot of problems, a lot of elements, a lot of politics, and I think this is just a straight policy question about how do we want to treat these kids. We do have two other folks on the phone, Melissa Lazarine, who's with First Focus, and Marshall Fitz with the American Immigration Lawyers Association. And they both have been following this bill very closely. And Melissa or Marshall, anything you'd add to that?
Hi, this is Marshall. I think you covered it all, Angie. I think that's spot on.
Agreed.
Dana, is there anyone else?
Yes,
lined
ma'am.
Up for questions?
Yes, ma'am. We'll take our next question from Julia Preston of the New York Times.
Yeah, hi. This is a question for Chancellor Bergenau. I just wanted to find out if everyone in the UC system is behind the same position, and if you could just quickly repeat about how many students you think are in your system that might benefit from DREAM Act legislation, and just in general, if you could just bring us up to date about what's happening in California with in-state tuition and undocumented kids.
Sure.
And the you know, I understand that's a separate issue. The state in-state tuition is a separate issue, but just quickly bring us up to date about that.
I think it's an important one. So, first of all, I've had strong support from all the other chancellors on public position we've taken at Berkeley on the DREAM Act, and I'm sure Mr. Gonzalez will, who's at Irvine, will confirm that. We don't know the exact number of undocumented students in the UC system, but we think it's about 300. And, of course, if the DREAM Act were to pass, it would be many more than 300. And the current situation in California is that undocumented students, as long as they graduate from California high schools, pay in-state tuition, but they are not eligible for financial aid. And this represents an extraordinary burden for them, obviously, since many are from impoverished backgrounds. And I just would like to say, generally, I think it's unfortunate that the people who will be voting on this will not have the benefit of actually meeting these students, because when you actually see the real face of these people and talk to them and listen to the challenges that they confront because of their inability to access financial aid and constraints on their future possible employment, that it's just emotionally overwhelming. And so one of the reasons that I, you know, have taken an active role in this is really just the straight human interaction with these extraordinary young people.
And we'll go next to Maribel Hastings of LA Opinion.
Hi, Angie. How are
you? Hi, Maribel.
Good, thank you. I was wondering, do you know if the senator is submitting the original version of the DREAM Act?
I'm on. This is Dick Durbin. I'm on.
Oh.
I apologize for being late. I was just leaving a WHIP meeting on the DREAM Act. And,
perfect.
I would say that this bill has gone through so many changes that when you say original, I think back 5 years. And it has gone through a number of changes. The one we are presenting today is basically the bill from the Comprehensive Immigration Bill, the final version of the DREAM Act as it was in the last Comprehensive Immigration Bill. If there's anything in particular...
Again.
Pardon me?
I was wondering, there were some changes regarding the in-state tuition and an age cap. Are those included?
Yes, the age cap is included. It's 30 years of age. And here is what the this version of the DREAM Act does not repeal or change the federal law that prohibits states from granting in-state tuition to illegal immigrants. Does not change it. However, once these students have reached legal status, you know, once they have graduated high school and certified they've been here, at least 5 years, came before the age of 16, good moral character, no criminal record. In that case, they would be eligible for federal student loans and work-study programs.
Thank you, Senator Durbin. Senator Durbin, this is Angela Kelly. I am moderating the event. Thank you so much for joining us. The other speakers have completed their statements, and we had just taken a few questions. We were awaiting your arrival and are
thank
thrilled
you.
That you can join us. So
well,
if you could just, you know, give us sort of your thoughts on the bill
sure.
and its prospects, that would be great, and then we can go back to Q&A, and if you can stay with us, we would
yes.
be honored.
I want to thank everyone who has been part of this, Bob Wise, Reg Weaver, or old friends, and thank you for being part of it. I want to thank the others. Robert, I hope I'm pronouncing your name correctly, Bergano, and Robert Gonzalez, Roberto Gonzalez. I think I came in on the tail end of a comment by Mr. Gonzalez, I believe, relative to meeting these students. And I just had an office full of four or five of these young people who are watching this DREAM Act because it's their whole life is on, you know, at risk here, and whole life hangs in the balance as to what's going to happen. And I have felt that kind of special responsibility since I originally introduced this bill 5 years ago. And the more and more of these young people I meet, the more determined I become to pass this. It is not the best time to bring it up because of the Comprehensive Immigration Bill's fate just a few months ago, and the heated political debate in some parts of our country about immigration, but I felt a special obligation to try and to give it my best effort. And I'm heartened by the support I'm receiving on the floor. Now, I need 60 votes tomorrow at 11:30 in Washington. That is the first procedural threshold. It's called a cloture motion on motion to proceed. And you need to get your 60 votes there to start the process of considering the bill. We have commitments from about 8 Republicans at this point, and we are that number is growing by the minute as we reach out to them personally. We have 3 or 4 Democrats who are not in our column at this point. So when you do the math, you can see that that puts us somewhere in the mid-50s. Now, absenteeism and changes of heart, these things happen. It's part of my lifestyle here. But I can just say this. I have introduced this bill 5 years ago. I believe in it passionately, since I have met these young people and believe they're not only fine people, but would be a great asset to the future of the United States if given a chance. Some of their stories are heartbreaking stories about what they've been through no fault of their own, brought here as toddlers and infants. Many of them know no other country, speak no other language, and now are being told to leave. And that literally is the message from our government. What they are asking is for a chance to stay and to become tomorrow's nurses and teachers and doctors and engineers and dentists and bioengineers and things that I'm being specific, what they tell me their aspirations are. And so this bill would give them a chance. The number of students impacted by this, the estimates vary widely. The Congressional Budget Office says we believe under 100,000 students overall would benefit from the DREAM Act, under 100,000. But the Migration Policy Institute says we believe under 500,000. So you can see there's a wide variation here. We just don't know, creating this incentive, how many will take advantage of it. Now, there are two options, obviously. Attending 2 years of college is one, and the other is service in the military. And I can just tell you the military leaders have come to me, some publicly but most privately, and said this would be a terrific opportunity for us to find well-qualified recruits to serve our country. And we believe this group is particularly, by their disposition and their history, have been those likely to sign up and serve and do a great job when they do it. I think back to the importance of the military in racial politics in America. I think finally when the racial barriers were broken down in our military in the late 40s and early 50s, it really was the beginning of a positive change in America. I think the same thing is going to be true for those who voluntarily choose to enlist in the military here. They will progress through the ranks and, of course, I think serve their country well and change the national attitude about this issue. But in the meantime, there are two options: go to college or join the military. Glad to answer any questions you all might have.
Thank you. Dana, perhaps you could review for people how they can line up to ask questions.
Absolutely. Thank you. Once again, if you'd like to signal to ask a question, please press *1 on your touchtone phone, and please make sure that your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. And we'll go next to Pablo Sanchez of Univision.
Hello, Eugene. Hello, Senator. Thank you for being here.
Sure.
A couple of questions for question for Senator Durbin and for Mr. Gonzalez. One of the things we find when we cover these stories is that usually those who oppose it say, well, the figures show that this will be a burden on states and educational budgets, as well as displace quote, American students worthy. Are there any figures, any numbers that we have here that show either that they are not displacing these students, or they're not adding to a cost?
I can just say that on the first issue about a burden on our society, imagine for a moment that you take a youngster. You provide a place for that youngster to live, to grow up, to be educated, and the youngster takes advantage of the system and uses the assets of America to reach high school graduation. The question obviously now is, what do you do next? Do you tell them to leave, or do you give them a chance for a few more years of education to really become a contributing member of society? I think it would be a great waste if they left. We have invested a great deal in these young people. Many of them have risen to the highest level of academic achievement in high school, and it would be a great loss if they left. In terms of their impact on America's higher education and whether they would exclude other students, there's so many options for higher education in America. I find it hard to imagine that they would be squeezing out other students. They are limited in terms of the help that they can get, no Pell Grants, for example. The money that they are given to go to school, they have to pay back. So I think that to look at it from the other perspective, what a terrible waste it would be to walk away from these kids.
Roberto, do you have anything to add? I know that.
Just a minute.
Yeah, I would say that in terms of the displacement issue, that we're really talking about very, very small numbers. In the UC, in the University of California system, the California's public education system, the UCs, the CSUs, and the community colleges, we're talking about 2.5 million students. The undocumented students make up 1/3%. 1/3% also in Texas. And so in these very large public education, states with public education, we're talking about a very small number. And the issue of displacement really is one, these students have competed successfully with their peers to earn their spots in college and do quite well. In terms of a burden on society, from a public policy standpoint, does it make sense to have a subclass of young people who cannot vote, who cannot work, and cannot contribute?
Thank you.
Thank you. I wonder if I could just add, this is Robert Virginal. I mean, I want to reemphasize the points that Senator Durbin and Mr. Gonzalez just made, which is these are extraordinarily talented people. Much of the wealth of the state of California has been built on the backs of immigrants. And 30% of startup companies in Silicon Valley have been led by people who created and led by people who immigrated to the United States. So immigrants have made enormous contributions to this country, and these people, these undocumented students, are particularly talented and highly motivated people who can continue that tradition.
This is Bob Wise. If I could just jump in as well. I noticed almost every day there's an article in a national journal or some kind of national paper about a company seeking H-1B visas to bring talented individuals to this country because we don't have enough. Here we have a chance to grow our own and to take advantage of the investment that's already been made.
Next question, please.
And we'll go next to Peter Schrag of the Sacramento Bee.
Thanks. This question is primarily addressed to Senator Durbin. I take it you have a firm commitment that the cloture vote will be held tomorrow, Wednesday?
Yes.
From Senator Reid, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right.
Do you know what time that's going to be?
11:30 Eastern time.
Okay. I have another question to sort of follow up on the statement that Governor Wise made just a moment ago having to do with H-1Bs. A group of governors just a month ago, from major states, Democrats and Republicans, sent a letter to Congress pleading for an expansion of the H-1B program for exactly the reasons that Governor Wise mentioned. Has anybody... and the governors include our own Arnold Schwarzenegger, Elliot Spitzer in New York, Tom Pawlenty in Minnesota, a number of them. Has anybody made an effort to get back to those governors and ask them why they're not supporting the DREAM Act?
Good point. No, not that I know of, but it's an excellent point that was raised this morning by Senator Menendez. You know, he said, and I concur with this feeling, and I think Governor Wise just said something along the same lines. If the argument is that we don't have enough talent in America and we need to bring in talent like H-1Bs and H-2Bs, then why in the world would we ask talented young people to leave? And that is what the DREAM Act's all about. And it troubles many of us that the business community has used their resources and their influence to push for the expansion of foreign workers in the United States, but has not joined us in this effort to make sure that these young people have a chance to be part of our talent pool, our labor pool in the future. And I'll go a step beyond that. What Senator Menendez said this morning is, if you're telling the DREAM Act kids to leave, then he is not going to jump up and be supportive of efforts to expand H-1B.
The next question, please, Dana.
And we'll go next to Nicole Gowett of the LA Times.
Hi. Thanks for taking my question. Senator, could you respond to conservative criticism that the bill is something of a Trojan horse and would lead to a much broader, quote-unquote, amnesty than it appears on paper? The argument is that once these kids get legal status, they could turn around and then sponsor family members.
As they say, I'm glad you asked. DREAM Act beneficiaries would have very limited ability to sponsor family members. They could never sponsor extended family members. And they could not even begin sponsoring parents or siblings for at least 6 years. Now, parents who are illegally present in the United States would have to leave the country for 10 years before they could gain legal status. And the visa backlog for siblings is decades long. So this notion that somehow this will lead to chain migration is just wrong.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go, I'm sorry. We'll go,
go
next
go ahead,
to Eunice Moscoso of Cox Newspapers.
Yes, thank you. Senator Durbin, can you repeat again the in-state tuition just to make sure I understood it correctly? Because that's a big, the critics talk a lot about that. Is it the change you made recently is still in
yes.
there?
The most recent change would, the new version of the DREAM Act, most recent version of the DREAM Act, does not repeal or change the federal law that prohibits states from granting in-state tuition to illegal immigrants.
Okay. So they will not be getting in-state tuition under
that's
the
right.
Okay. Thank you.
And we'll go next to Carrie Budoff of Politico.
Hi, thank you. Senator Durbin, can you talk about the prospects in the House as well as what kind of reception you're getting from the White House?
Well, the White House was very supportive of the DREAM Act during the comprehensive immigration debate. I will just tell you point blank, and I think anyone who was part of that negotiation can tell you, this was the first item on the agenda. And the belief among Democrats primarily, but many Republicans, was there would be no comprehensive immigration bill without the DREAM Act. And so we sat down and worked it out with Secretary Chertoff, Secretary Gutierrez, and the White House. The specific language was approved by them. Now, I will tell you that it was a slightly different version because we had J visas and a lot of things, but the fundamental concepts were all there in agreement with the White House. Since then, it's been interesting because they've said, well, we're not sure we want to address the DREAM Act individually. It should be part of comprehensive reform. Well, comprehensive reform is not likely to go forward either this year or in an election year. So I'm hoping that they would reconsider that position. I have been told privately by people at the highest levels of this administration they support the DREAM Act. There may be some calculations I'm not aware of which make them reluctant to say that publicly. But they supported it as part of comprehensive immigration, and many of them privately still believe it's a sound idea.
And we'll take our next question from Carrie Ann Brouillard of The Washington Post.
Hi. My question's already been asked, but I'll ask a second part of it, which is relating to the idea that this offers amnesty to illegal immigrants. One of the other arguments against it is that it offers some sort of encouragement for those who are not now in the United States to come.
Not at all.
Young people or families who see this as a way to get there.
Let me tell you, the eligible group for DREAM Act benefits, those between the age of 5 and 30. So anyone who is in another country who believes, if I just come illegally to the United States and bring a child, that child will someday benefit from the DREAM Act is wrong. The law specifically says you must be here 5 years. So as of the date of the passage of this bill, or the signing of this into law, so it would not apply to those who would come in after this. They couldn't be eligible under the terms of the DREAM Act. And secondly, let me go to one of the fundamentals that made it I think an important part of the comprehensive immigration debate. Everyone at the table understood this. There is a fundamental concept here that we don't hold children responsible for the sins or crimes of their parents. And in this case, many children at an early age were brought along with their families and had no voice in that decision. and their families made a decision to come into the United States illegally, and the question now is, shall the children be punished for that decision?
So let me just clarify. So it would only be those who, from the day this act was signed, this bill was signed, it would be those who had been in the country for 5 years.
That's right.
Okay.
Those under the age of 5 obviously couldn't qualify, mm-hmm. or anyone coming in after the bill signed.
Okay.
If I could follow up, there are 10 states currently that have in-state tuition laws for undocumented students, and in research shows that in those 10 states, there has not been an influx of new immigrant students in the universities, nor have they displaced native-born students. And so it's not this issue about displacement and this issue about getting an overwhelming number of new entrants. It's just the research shows that that's not true.
I can only take one more question. I have to leave if anyone has.
Do we have another question, Dana?
We do. Thank you. We'll go next to Frank Wolf of Education Daily.
Yeah. Hi, Senator. I just wanted to check again in terms of legislatively what you think is going to you said you have about in the mid-50s right now on the cloture vote. Legislatively, what is substantively is different this time? We've talked about it, but I just wondered if you could just sort of nail it down for us a little more in terms of what's going to make this sort of maybe a quote-unquote easier pill to swallow for those who might still be opposed to it.
The DREAM Act has always been in a kind of special category in this immigration debate. It is a bill that's had broad bipartisan support. The original author of the bill was Orrin Hatch, and I co-sponsored it with him. We put it in together. Over the years, it became my bill, and then Chuck Hagel joined me. It's had broad bipartisan support, and it's been voted out of the Judiciary Committee on a vote of 16-3 and adopted unanimously as part of a comprehensive immigration bill. So it has really enjoyed kind of a special status from the beginning. After the last comprehensive immigration debate, a Republican senator who'd voted against immigration reform called me in Chicago and just a few days later and said, "You've got to call the DREAM Act. You know, I didn't agree with the last version of the comprehensive bill, but I do support the DREAM Act. Give us a chance to do that. That's the right thing to do." And that inspired me to try again. And I think that it really is viewed differently by many members of Congress because it does involve children under special circumstances. In terms of this bill, we have tried to tighten it up. I made some concessions that I hoped I'd never have to make, but it still, you know, maintains the same basic goals and principles and values in it in terms of giving these kids a chance to prove themselves and become part of America's future.
Thank you, Senator. Thank you very much
for
your time.
I'm sorry I came in late. I thank you all for participating in this. Appreciate it very much.
Senator, on behalf of the University of California, I want to thank you for your terrific work on this. We really appreciate it. The whole state of California appreciates your efforts.
Well, thank you. I hope we can get it done tomorrow. Thanks a lot.
Good luck, Senator.
Bye-bye.
Dana, the other speakers, I think, can stay on for a few more minutes, and if we've got more questions in the queue, why don't we see if they can be directed at the other speakers, and then we'll wrap up shortly.
Thank you, ma'am. We'll go next to Deirdre Shesgreen of St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
My question was answered already.
Terrific.
Thank you. And if if your question has been asked and answered, you can remove yourself by pressing *2. And we'll go next to Amy Jackson of the Orange County Register.
Hi, yes. My question was for Senator Durbin, but I'll throw it out there in case someone else wants to answer. I was curious. He said that he's gotten sort of private support from members of the DOD, and I was just wondering why support has not been more public on the military sort of component of the bill, and if there was any estimate as to how many of these graduating high school students might be interested in joining the military.
I don't know why it hasn't been more public. There have been some articles quoting military personnel indicating that they think that passage of the DREAM Act would help in terms of military readiness, and quite frankly lamenting that it hasn't been passed. And I know that certainly I've read Margaret Stock, who's an associate professor of law at West Point, has said that, you know, given that military services are experiencing such difficulties recruiting eligible enlisted soldiers, passing this bill would help. So there have been, I think, those kinds of comments made. This is Angela Kelly, by the way. But in terms of, you know, what's happening in the inner workings between the White House and the the military folks on this specific question, I don't think we know the answer to that. Are there any other speakers on the line who might be able to say more?
Well, this is Marshall. I think the short answer is that the Department of Defense doesn't lobby on specific bills, and it's really under the purview of the White House about whether and how they're going to weigh in on a particular piece of legislation. And we heard from Senator Durbin about the position that the White House has staked out on this. Presumably, the Department of Defense is likewise restricted by that policy position that the White House is currently taking, even if at the highest levels they recognize how critical this piece of legislation would be for their recruitment and readiness efforts.
And this is Melissa Lassadin with First Focus. I would just add, having met dozens and dozens of these students, I would say the majority of them, are in this to pursue higher education. And it's my feeling that would be where the majority would go. However, I can say that we have met several students who are aspiring for a career in the military. And, the DREAM Act is about providing opportunities, whether it's higher education, military service. This is about allowing students to dream. And, so just wanted to add to that second part of your question.
Dana, are there any more questions in the queue?
Yes, ma'am. We'll go next to Suzanne Straglinski of Deseret Morning News.
Hi. I know this is kind of just answered, but just a different way of asking it. When this was proposed during the defense bill, or at least talked about being proposed, the increase in the military was sort of the end to that. What's sort of the argument to be putting it with the labor HHS bill?
It's actually, this is Angie from IPC. It's not being put with any bill. It's a free.
Oh, it's a standalone. This
yeah,
okay,
yeah.
I'm sorry. Misunderstood then.
No, that's all right. It's because the power that Majority Leader Reid has to bring a bill to the floor is how this bill has made it there. So it's not being attached to anything.
Okay, I just misunderstood then. Thank you.
Sure.
And we'll go next to Susan Ferris of the Sacramento Bee.
Hi. I know that this has partially been answered already, but the Numbers USA and some of the organizations opposed to the DREAM Act are giving the impression that it is unending, that there's no termination to the bill. Those are the words that they use. And in a sense, could you say that this is a one-time attempt or chance
sure.
to legalize, since the senator said that it's for people
yeah.
between the ages of 5 and 30?
Yeah, no, that's a great question, Susan. And it's not in a sense. It is most definitely a one-time for a very defined population of young people, children, who have been here already for at least 5 years. So there will be a graduating class, if you will, of DREAM Act kids. In 13 years or so, and that will be the last of the young people who will be able to who would be eligible to benefit. So the very youngest ones, if the bill passed tomorrow, would be, a 5-year-old who's obviously been in the U.S. for 5 years, but came illegally as an infant. And so when that 5-year-old finishes high school and meets all the other requirements of not only getting a high school diploma, but all the security checks, being a person of good moral character, having kept his nose clean and not having a criminal record, and then earns a degree or then wears a uniform and puts, his or her life on the line for this country, would they get permanent residency? And that would be the last kid. So it's very
Thank
defined.
You.
And we'll take our next question from Isabel Condi with EFE News Service.
Hi, good morning. I would like to ask you, if
What do you think it makes the difference here from the last time they tried to put it like an attachment for the defense fund bill? And if it doesn't pass tomorrow, do you think it will be then the last opportunity this year?
Marshall, you want to take a crack at that, or you want me to do it?
Is the question whether there's a better chance on as a standalone than as part of the defense authorization bill?
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things that we've seen, unfortunately, with many of these immigration measures is that people try to find a way not to take what they perceive as tough votes. I think collectively all of us on the phone are scratching our head to understand why this would be a tough vote, since this is simply about providing kids with an opportunity. But the political reality is that people do, senators and congressmen do look for ways to not vote, to not have to take a hard vote. And so they try to find procedural rationales for not voting, or they find other principled rationales for not voting. And what we found on the defense authorization bill was that a number of senators told us that they supported the legislation, they supported the DREAM Act, but they did not want the defense authorization bill to be sullied or mixed up with an immigration issue that was going to potentially make it controversial. And so the short answer is that, yes, we should have a more straight up or down vote on the DREAM Act this time around, and the people who feigned concern over adding it to the defense authorization bill now should have nowhere to hide, and if they support it, they should vote for it tomorrow.
Okay, thank you.
And then in terms of your second part of your question, is if it doesn't come to pass this week, will it come back? I think the answer is yes. I think that's true of all the, legitimate issues and concerns related to our broken immigration system. But, most especially this relates to America's youth and their future. And, quite frankly, what kind of country do we want to be in terms of how we treat kids who are as American as my two daughters and don't know any other country? And I just think that a lot of members are going to have explaining to do if tomorrow they vote no on a bill that is, fundamentally about giving kids a chance.
And we'll take our next question from Linda Campbell of Fort Worth Star-Telegram.
Hi. This is a procedural question, and I appreciate you taking it. I don't know if there's somebody there who can answer it besides the senator. Let's say he succeeds on the cloture vote. Mm-hmm. When is the soonest that there could actually be the straight up or down vote on the act?
This is Angie, and others chime in. If they were to get past the cloture vote tomorrow, right, we get to 60, they're on the bill, they could file for cloture again, which would be to limit debate and to call the question on a final vote on the bill. That would take 2 days to ripen. So I guess the fastest that this could move would be a final vote on Friday. I don't know that it will move that fast,
right.
But I think that would be the quickest it could go. Does that sound right to others?
Yeah, realistically, that's the quickest it could go. They could just enter into an agreement on the number of amendments considered, and they could come to a vote on final passage sooner than that. But realistically, there will be objections, and they will need to file cloture on the underlying bill. And so even if they turn to that immediately or soon after a successful vote on the motion to proceed tomorrow, it would still take till Friday before it would ripen into a final vote.
Okay.
Why don't we just take a few more questions since we're coming up on an hour and I know folks are busy.
Actually, we should just be clear. Even if it came, they filed for cloture tomorrow on the underlying bill, there would be a vote on cloture on Friday. That would still not be a vote on the underlying bill.
That's true.
So there's another 30 hours of post-cloture debate. So you know, and again, they could reach an agreement to go to move to an earlier vote, and that, I guess, could happen on Friday, but in all likelihood, that would carry us over, I think, into Monday.
And we'll go next to Elizabeth Redden of Inside Higher Education.
Hi, yes, I just wanted to follow up on the earlier question about this bill having a built-in, I guess, sort of expiration date, so to speak, or a built-in group of people that it will benefit. Is that a change from earlier versions of the DREAM Act in terms of having a set group after which point, as I think someone said, there would be a graduating class? Is that a change with this version, or was that always the case?
This is Melissa Lacerino with First Focus. That has always been the case. It's an original feature of the DREAM Act.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Why don't we take one more question, and then I think we'll sign off. Dana, do we have any more?
Yes, ma'am. We'll go next to Jerry Kammer of Copley.
Jerry.
I wanted to follow up on a point made by Chancellor Bergenau. I was struck that, unless I misunderstood, there are only 300 undocumented kids in the whole UC system.
That's what we know. That's the number we estimate, but because obviously many undocumented students are reluctant to self-identify, then that's an extremely uncertain number.
Okay, and do you have any idea as to how large that universe of kids could become if the DREAM Act were passed? Or
you know, it would be, to be honest, it would be just a guess, and I'd rather not do that. Maybe Roberto Gonzalez, if he's still on the line,
we don't know in California, but I think, as the senator said earlier, nationally we're looking at 100,000 to 360,000 who would be eligible. And so it depends on what happens with in-state tuition in various states and with financial aid. Many of these students end up, a vast majority in Texas, about 75% end up in community colleges. And so while the chancellor is speaking of the UC system, there are also students in the Cal State system and a majority in California community colleges.
Okay, thank you.
All right, I think that concludes, because I see that we're coming up upon 1 o'clock. If there is anyone on the line who hasn't had their question answered, please feel free to give me a call. This is Angela Kelly, and my number is 202-742-5602, and I'll put you in touch with the appropriate speaker to answer any questions that you've got. I'd like to thank all the speakers for the tremendous amount of time that they gave and their dedication and their expertise. Thank you all very much, and please follow up with any questions that you've got. Thank you, Dana.
Thank you. And that does conclude today's conference call. Thank you for your participation.
Thank you.
Disconnect at this time.
Thank you.